Hey everyone, welcome to the second episode of the Untitled Gadget Podcast. My name is Harish Chennalagadda from Android Central, and today we have quite the show for you. Joining me are Dhruv Bhutani from Android Authority and Akshay Balla from Men's XP Tech. How's it going, guys?
It's good. Did you hear his last name? How he said
it? I did. I think I finally know how to pronounce it.
Chennalagadda?
I got a flu. I'm not going to attempt it this week. Maybe next one.
Yes. Okay. Finally. Okay.
But yeah, we're doing good, man. How are you?
Yeah, it's been a busy week, and next week is set to be even busier with all the phones that are launching here. So let's dive straight in and talk about the two devices that are launching here next week. Let's start off with the Realme X50 5G. So the phone is set to launch tomorrow, 24th February in India, and Realme has been teasing a lot of details on social media, so we know what the phone is all about. We know that it will have 6 cameras in total. That will be the first, in quotes, 5G phone in India, and it has a 64MP shooter according to the leaks, and there's a lot of exciting tech here. So before we go into the details on what the phone is all about, I wanted to get your thoughts on what Realme is doing here. What do you think about Realme trying to launch a 5G phone in India when there's no network?
It's sheer marketing. It's all marketing, and that's about it. And the unfortunate truth is that people are playing into the marketing aspect of this. There is absolutely no reason to get a 5G phone in India right now. I mean, certainly that should not be the key lead point for your marketing effort, at least. And that seems to be all that Realme is focusing on. In fact, like, even the other phone that we'll be talking about shortly, that is also a 5G phone that has launched ahead of the Realme. But even they're just talking about 5G, and what's the point of this? Like, we're not getting networks in India for the next 2 years at least, and by then these 5G phones will be antiquated. You'll already be ready to upgrade to the next phone.
In my idea, I mean, you know, when people buy a phone, they look for features to basically show off to their friends. Some phones have a pop-up camera, some phones have a great selfie camera, some has fast charging, some have some weird feature to show off to friends. But in this case, there's nothing tangible. 5G doesn't work in India. You can't really show, oh, look at the download speeds I'm getting. So it's just something that you'll tell your friends, oh, I've got a 5G phone, but I can't show you how it actually works because we don't have the infrastructure for it. So for me, it's kind of a gimmicky thing that will probably work 2 years down the line, maybe 3 years, not even 2 years. So, and by the time, I think this phone itself will get to old, there'll be new 5G phones. So I don't know who this is for.
Yeah, that's the main point here. Because by the time 5G networks actually go live in India, these things will be outdated. I mean, they're already a little outdated. Qualcomm basically announced its third 5G modem earlier this week. And that thing is even better than what's already in this A65. Because that's built on a 5-nanometer node. So it's much more energy efficient. And it also has carrier aggregation for the first time on 5G. So this, by the time this modem rolls out next year on phones, the X50 and all the other phones that we have coming this year will already be outdated by the time consumers in India will be able to use 5G. So yeah, I agree that it's purely marketing, but it does make for good marketing, doesn't it?
It does, but then again, like, I mean, I just don't get this. You know, I'm sure there are other characteristics that they can market about the phone, be it design, be it just the imaging prowess or anything else. Like, but why 5G? That is just bonkers.
Yeah, I mean, last week we spoke about how I saw 5G in action, and I don't see that happening in India right now. So just having this phone for the sake of it, it doesn't really make sense. It also depends on how they price it. If they price it well, maybe go for it. But if it's ridiculously priced, being one of the first few 5G phones, then I don't know. I don't know how it's going to go down.
I mean, suffice it to say that 5G should certainly not be the reason why anybody's buying this phone.
Yeah, it should be the other things.
That's absolutely true. They're actually coming at the worst possible time, right? Because Vodafone and Airtel just got hit with these massive thousands of crores worth of fines just a few weeks ago. And then now these device manufacturers are trying to build all this excitement around 5G when the carriers must be thinking, no, you're not going to get any of that. Sorry.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, hasn't Airtel said that they're going to stay away from the 5G auctions till the time, you know, the entire spectrum space clears up a bit and there's more clarity on how the government is going to approach this in the future?
Yep.
I mean, that leaves essentially just Jio as the only operator which might be getting into the 5G space at all.
Yeah. I mean, at least right now, Jio is the only one that's looking moderately decent in terms of long-term viability in India, right? Because Airtel's revenue for this year and next year is going to be absolutely ruined because of this fine, and Vodafone saying that it may even pull out of the market entirely because of it. So Jio is probably the only vendor that will even consider rolling it out anytime soon, if that were the case.
Yeah, I think that leaves us with another topic for maybe next week, where we really should talk about how India's heading towards a monopoly in the operator space. Vodafone is essentially out. The government operators are practically bankrupt and will likely be pulling out of the market. Airtel is not particularly interested in investing any further into the infrastructure. That really just leaves Jio. Or do you think that's going to get too political?
It's going to get weird talking about this because we've gone up to multiple operators in the country and all of a sudden there might just be one or two. And that is going to hurt a lot of people, including customers, because when there's no competition, these guys can charge anything they want and get away with it. And with 5G coming in, we can expect extraordinary, huge prices for plans that we didn't even see with 4G.
Yeah, that's true. It's a shame. Anyway, we'll talk a lot more about 5G next week because by that time the phones will actually go live and we would have used them, and then we'll have a better understanding of how they work and what they don't offer. So stay tuned for that.
Although I have one question. What do you think about all the jibes people from each three companies, Xiaomi, Realme and iQOO, are taking at each other?
It's absolutely moronic. I don't understand what the hell these guys are doing with this. I mean, I understand messing with your competitor, but that just seems childish, right? I mean, at least they're all talking about a technology that doesn't even exist in India, and they're trying to say that our thing is the best, and it just doesn't make sense. I mean, it makes good fodder for social media. This is why folks come to Twitter, right? To see somebody bitching about something else. But other than that, I mean, it just comes across as petty.
Yeah, that's true.
I can. I think we can talk more about these phones next week when we. I mean, we're not supposed to talk about them right now, but when we can talk about them, we'll talk about it next week and see what the phone's actually about rather than just the 5G aspect of it.
Yeah. On that note, I just wanted to give a little preview, as it were. What do you guys think about the specs here? So I read recently that the Realme X50 Pro might come up to what? 50,000. They were estimating that it could cost that much. Would do you guys think Realme would be able to sell a phone for that high in India? Is there a market for that?
Not yet. Not at all. I mean, I think they're putting themselves into the same situation as Xiaomi, where they gradually ramped up the prices and they thought that they could sell a 40,000 rupee phone at that time, and it didn't really work for them. I mean, Realme has grown massively, but they haven't grown to that point, and they just don't have that kind of brand pull where they can realistically sell numbers of a 50,000 rupee phone. I mean, I'm sure they'll have a press statement out within a few days that they've sold out of inventory, but
how much of that was actually
is that inventory? 10 phones, 100 phones, or 1,000 phones?
We don't. Nobody ever tells you how many units they've sold. They will always tell you it's sold out. But yeah, if you sold out 5 units, it doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, 50,000, the only phone I would consider would be OnePlus, because they've dominated that segment, right? So for me, Realme should have like a fantastic camera that hands down beats whatever OnePlus is offering for it to be worth that money.
Yeah, that's the thing though, right? Like, OnePlus has dominated the segment because they've proved themselves. They've consistently delivered good to excellent devices. I mean, even their worst hasn't been a bad phone. It's just that our expectations have always been too high from them.
They've been able to turn around their brand image like no other brand. I mean, Samsung always had a good following. iPhone was always iPhone for people. And OnePlus turned out to be a really good alternative to the iPhone. And it's all probably a mixture of marketing, great product, all of it fused together to deliver something that people actually want. And we can see OnePlus has been increasing their prices for the past 2 years, but people are still buying their phones.
Yeah, we talked a lot about this last week, and I don't know why, but every week we seem to shower praises on these guys. So let's move away from that now before this turns.
Yeah, we're not paid by OnePlus.
Yeah. So let's talk about the iQOO that's launching on Tuesday, February 25th. What are you guys excited about that? I mean, are you guys excited for that device? What do you want to see from that? Because this is a brand new sub-brand, as it were, or brand.
You know, I think I'm excited to finally figure out how to pronounce the name of the phone.
Yeah.
That's one thing that I haven't figured out yet. Is it iQOO? Is it IQ? Is it iQOO? Who knows?
Chiku.
Is it Chiku?
Oh, my God.
I'll probably say whatever we said for the Realme, right? Just copy paste that entire thing for the iQOO, and those are my opinions. It's exactly the same. Plus, it has something else against working against it. It's a brand new brand that nobody has ever heard of, and if they charge exorbitant prices as well, no one's really gonna invest in those phones because we don't even know what iQOO is. I mean, we know, but people won't know what iQOO is. And what's the philosophy of the brand, and whether it's reliable or not. It's still young, so nobody knows.
But you know, that's the interesting bit. It's yet another BBK brand. They have more than enough money behind them. They've signed up Virat Kohli as their ambassador.
Which is a big deal.
I mean, when Vivo came in, like, none of us took them too seriously. And maybe in a tier one market, we still wouldn't recommend a Vivo phone over some of the other competition. But then you go to the tier two, tier three markets, just through blatant marketing, like, and doing a marketing blitz, they've got hoardings everywhere. They are actually doing decent numbers.
Yeah, but this was Samsung and Nokia playbook from a decade ago, right? That's what Samsung
did. Do you think iQOO can repeat that? Vivo has already done that. Oppo has done that as well. But I don't see iQOO doing it either, especially with the phone that they're coming out with. Vivo has a range of products to sell in the offline market especially. iQOO has only one right now, or maybe two, and going all out the Vivo way or the Oppo way.
And it is a high-end product.
And it's a very high-end product, which people will not buy in tier 2 cities because they probably don't give a damn what's inside the phone.
Yeah.
You tell them it's 865 and 5G, like, screw you, man, Jio's not working. Fuck 5G. What am I going to do with an iQOO phone in the middle of nowhere? I'm going to take pictures of fucking fields and shit. You know? So that's
classist. That's mean.
Yeah.
But they actually think about this when in tier 2 cities, when they're buying a phone. Do I really need an expensive phone? Because my life is simple. I don't go out clubbing like people in tier 1 city, so I really don't need a great camera. I just need to communicate, and I probably need to watch YouTube.
I don't think they're seeing YouTube, I think they're on TikTok.
Whatever it is, it's not something that they need a flagship level phone for.
Right.
So that's the thing, like, whatever little we've seen of the phone so far, it seems to be a decent phone.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a lesser OnePlus.
Yeah.
It's just that quality that OnePlus delivers, it just isn't there on the iQOO or iQOO or whatever.
I'm just going to call it
iQOO.
It's
not a bad phone. Yeah, well, I mean, it's not going to be a cheap phone. So why should you settle for this? Like, why should you never settle? And once again, I'm not being paid by OnePlus.
This is turning into the OnePlus fan community podcast.
We have your ears, and next week we're going to call it open ears session, fucking New Delhi or Hyderabad.
Oh my God. Akshay is in full flow today. Okay. So yeah, on the iQOO, I don't know. Hardware, it's going to be the same as every other phone that we see with 5G. But I'm more interested in the software. They've made big claims on how their software is going to be this really clean interface that doesn't have any usual Vivo shit in it. So I'm particularly interested in finding out how that turns out.
Cool. So I think we're all under embargo, so we should probably just skate away from the topic.
Shut our mouths.
Yeah, we should just shut our mouths.
Wait, time. Okay, and
yeah,
then
watch out for more on this next week.
Yeah.
So let's talk about something that's not a phone, and that is a console. Microsoft and Sony are set to launch their next-gen console sometime this year, and this week we got a pretty decent look at the specs that they'll come with. Now, I don't play a lot of games on consoles, so I'll defer to you guys and on what we should expect and why these consoles are such a big deal.
I am so excited. Are you excited, Akshay?
I'm counting down the days when Sony actually unveils the console. Yeah. I'm looking things online. I just want to see the damn console now.
My day starts with looking up the PS5 subreddit, and it ends with that as well. I think it's a bit much, but yeah, that's how it is. Can't wait for December. Or November, actually.
Wait, we have to wait until November?
We don't know. I mean, it's this a holiday. It can be anywhere from October to December.
Yeah, November is when the console comes out, so there's that. But yeah, like, I think at this point, all of us are just waiting for any little nibble of information that Sony's going to give out. But thankfully, the leaks have started flowing, and there's a lot of information that is beginning to trickle out, including purportedly the entire spec sheet. Akshay, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, apart from the spec sheet, let's talk about the most recent report by Bloomberg. And they said the PlayStation costs around $350 to make, and they might sell it for $370. For some reason, I don't know.
$450.
Was it? No, $350.
No.
$450.
Yeah. It's $450.
Oh, yeah, $450. Sorry, $450, and they might sell it for $470. That's okay. Keeping that into perspective, the PS4 launched at $400. Now, we already know it will be more expensive because of the specs. And just for our Indian listeners, let's say Sony does sell it for $470 in the US. In India, it turns out to be 43,000 rupees because India charges 28% import fees. That's just ridiculous. But the reason why it's expensive is the specs. It's got an SSD, it's got insane amounts of RAM, it's got the AMD's new processors and the GPU as well. And from the latest leak, we saw that this 512 SSD on the PS5.
Yeah, I think from a broader perspective, the PS4 was okay when it launched, but it was a little under powered. Finally, the PS5 will... I mean, okay, a console is never going to be overpowered compared to a PC or whatever, but it'll be competitive. And that matters when you're buying a device that's supposed to last you 6 to 7 years.
Yeah.
And let's just factor in the entire inflation as well. If you're okay with buying a $1,000 phone, a $500 console which lasts you 6 to 7 years... is absolutely fine.
Yeah, that's a good point to make about the inflation, because the one article I was reading about PlayStation 5 pricing was from Ars Technica, and they do a really great job breaking down how a $500 price point isn't too insane, and that consoles over the last two decades have traditionally been in that $400 to $450 price range adjusted for inflation, right? So when you look at the hardware that you're getting with this thing, I mean, $500 is insanely low, because if you're looking to get that kind of performance out of a PC, you'll have to shell out at least 3 or 4 times that much, right? So let's go ahead and delve down into those specs to see why they matter. The PlayStation 5 is touted to have a 12.6 teraflops of performance, and the Xbox Series X at 11.8. Now, that's insane. That's nearly twice as powerful as what we saw with the last generation. The Xbox One was what, 6 teraflops, if I remember. So
that's the mid-cycle refresh from the Xbox One X and the PS4 Pro. The PS4 was around
far less, 2.7,
like 2-point-something teraflops of performance.
Wow, that's insane. So that's like basically a lot of overhead for game makers to just go to town on textures, on 4K textures, and just create these beautiful worlds, right?
Yes and no. I mean, it still cannot match up to a PC's performance, right? But it will enable developers to make a lot of games with ray tracing, a lot of games with, 4K textures, but it won't be able to push 120 frames as they claim at 4K resolution. So it depends. I think it's going to come with various options, whether you want higher resolution or you want more frames. I think I like that kind of a flexibility, which has never been there on a console. And it all depends on developers, how they tap into the architecture of the console. I really don't care how powerful the console is. I want my games and I want them to look good. If neither of these prerequisites are met, then it doesn't matter to me. I mean, look at the Switch. It's not powerful, but it's got a great library of games and it's my favorite console.
Actually, on that note, there was a leak yesterday. I don't know if you saw that, Akshay, but obviously take this with a huge pinch of salt. But there's a fairly trusted guy on Reset Era, and he got a chance to check out some of the PS5 games and Xbox One X games that are coming out. And, well, one, they're running at 4K, 90 FPS locked, which is pretty good for a console. But beyond that, the player tactics changed in real time, responding to your tactics, and every single NPC in the game is going to have a unique character model that's being generated on the fly.
Yeah, you won't see it again.
Exactly. I think these are the little things which are going to bring a much more tangible improvement.
True. See, this could have been achieved easily on the PC like 5 years ago, but the problem is the gaming industry is very dependent on consoles. Most games are made for consoles and then ported over to PC. And today, when the PS5 and the Series X launch, we'll finally see games taking full advantage of AI, various options that were not feasible because the PS4 and Xbox One were not powerful enough.
Yes.
So yeah, it's exciting for sure.
And there's one more feature, especially on the PlayStation, that I'm really excited about. And Sony's been talking about this in the article with Wired, that they're going to have ray traced audio as well. Now, lately I've been playing a lot on my PS4 with my headphones plugged in, the 1000XM3, which are incredibly comfortable, and I'm finally about to finish The Witcher. Akshay, you'll be proud of that. And honestly, while I have a great set of speakers, the experience, the immersiveness that you get over a headphone is very different, and it just allows for, you know, late night gaming, for example, and it just brings the atmosphere close to you. And ray traced audio, positional audio, or even just virtual Atmos level surround sound over the headphones, which is exactly what Sony is going for, could also be a big game changer.
We already have that on PC. I don't know, Harish, what setup you use, but if you're in my room right now, you don't see a set of speakers.
The consoles are hitting PC parity.
Yeah.
Okay.
What I'm saying is that, again, it was possible on PC, but it never happened because of consoles.
Yeah.
Because of the limited capabilities of the consoles.
Yeah, and that
even right
and
now.
That's the interesting thing, right? Because every time I read about what's coming to a console, I'm like, I've been doing that on my PC for several years now. This is crazy. But it's good to see that they're getting to this level, because that means, as you rightly said, Akshay, most of the gaming industry revolves around consoles. So now that they're at a level where they're this powerful, it means that we're going to see a greater quality, a better quality games come out from more mainstream studios. And also, because of this hardware, don't you think these consoles now look like PCs? Because I was looking at Microsoft's design teaser for the Xbox, and that basically looks like a tower.
It is a tower.
I really hope the PS5 doesn't look anything like that. It's a little more compact.
The
designs that Sony's had over the years, and there's something iconic about all of them.
The reason why the Xbox looks like a PC tower is because Xbox has had issues with heat dissipation on all their consoles, especially with the 360, which caused the red ring of death. So I think this time, because of the specs that are being used and the amount of heat is being generated, they're going with a safe design, which is why I want to see what the PS5 looks like, because in no way it's going to be a sleek, small console. The specs are almost identical, and you need a bigger body frame so that you can dissipate heat more evenly.
Actually, on that note, the Bloomberg article, sorry guys, I've got a cold, a really bad one at that. So the Bloomberg article mentioned that they're spending more on cooling this time around, a bigger heat sink maybe.
Which is why it's getting expensive as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just that, you know, the Xbox One X, the Xbox
Series X.
That's a long name.
That's not one console though. It's a series of consoles they launch. I know. But still, yeah, it's a mouthful.
It's there. It's a box. Like, I think it's the culmination of everything that Xbox stands for. It is a box in your room which will basically play games. But like the PlayStation 5, it needs to have a design identity. It can't look like a mini box. Fridge.
Yeah. One thing I didn't like was, I mean, I'm going by the leak right now, is the 512 GB SSD. And the bigger the games get, and as Harish said, we're going to have 4K textures. There's no way I can have multiple games on that hard drive.
Yeah, there's no chance. That was going to be my last talking point on these things. So I'm looking at the sheet for the PS5 and it says it'll have a 500 GB SSD, but the Xbox is said to have a 1 TB SSD. So that will make a lot of difference, right? When somebody is looking to buy one of these things, because now games are at what, 100 GB each? So that basically means just 5 games or less on the PlayStation.
Not even 5 games, because there's OS as well, right?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it could just be the entry-level SKU. I'll be that console pleb. I have the OG PS4 with a 500 gig hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been sort of okay. Admittedly, I buy everything physical. I like stacking up boxes of video games. I like looking at my collection from time to time with nostalgia. I'm that guy. But it's been okay for me. Like, it's only been just like once or twice that I've had to delete stuff from the console. And that's anyways after I finished off a game, so...
But this is the problem, right? Even if you buy physical discs, and this is an example I'm going to quote from a week ago that I experienced. We now have updates for games for like 60 GB, 50 GB, an update for Call of Duty Modern Warfare last week. You were talking about Final Fantasy coming in 2 discs.
Yeah.
What the hell?
I mean, if you're going to have an update file of 50 GB every other week, you're screwed.
Yeah, what the hell are they adding to these games?
I don't know, man. They apologized for it. It was.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Isn't that a matter of bad optimization? If CD Projekt Red can get The Witcher 3 on a 16 GB memory card, sure, it's got reduced textures, but it is the full damn game.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it not possible for EA or Ubisoft to have small, you know, to better optimize their textures?
There are two reasons why. One, Witcher is more like a single-player game, right? So you can add on to it later on.
Mm-hmm.
Call of Duty being an online game, especially most of the reason why people play it throughout the year, it's an online game, which means it needs regular patches and regular updates to, like, playlists or...
50 gigs of patches?
Yeah, because they're bringing in Battle Royale in like a week or so. So cool. It's 50 gigs, that means new maps. I don't know what the fuck they're doing.
But that's where the new feature comes in, where you can segregate the single player mode and the multiplayer mode and download exactly what you want.
That's the choice they had to make, because they knew that no one's gonna buy a 1 TB console for fucking 60 grand.
And that's where the other option comes in. It's got a super fast SSD, so they won't need to repeat textures. Everything can be seeked out easily, so the games might actually be smaller.
Harish, what do you think? I mean, you're a PC gamer, and when you hear these things, don't you want to rip...
I'm going to apologize in advance for being a Sony fan.
I don't get these updates for games now, and I fully agree with Dhruv. Game studios should just emulate what CD Projekt Red have been doing, because those guys have consistently set the bar, right, for the last 2-3 years. And yeah, I just think at this point Ubisoft doesn't give a fuck. Like, it knows that everybody's gonna buy its shitty game year after year, so I mean, there's no incentive for it to optimize its games, and that's why I think we see these massive updates. But don't know, let's see if the 512 GB rumor actually pans out, and if Sony has another SKU that gives you a TB, because 512 GB honestly is not gonna be that not gonna be enough at all.
But regardless, I think the SSDs are going to be fairly easy to switch out. I think given that they've gone with a customized design this time around, they might just end up doing some sort of, you know, custom carts for expanding storage. I hope it doesn't become another Vita where the memory cards are way too expensive. But they'll have to offer a way to upgrade storage.
I'm sure Sony will find a way.
I mean, we can talk about hardware all day, but for me, it's the games that matter the most.
And Sony wins.
So far, they have won But Xbox has some great deals. They have the Game Pass. They have Project X coming up. And Sony has been quiet. And with Sony, there's another problem. There's so many problems. They're facing shortages with SSDs, with RAM. And coronavirus as well has been hitting their production. So I don't know what's going on with Sony and why are they hesitating to unveil the console. I'm a little worried what's happening. Xbox did it in December, and Sony has still nothing to say, and I'm getting a little worried. I mean, we're like 7-8 months away from it going on sale, and we still don't know what it looks like, what the price is. So,
but yeah. Hasn't that always been the Sony way? Because when the PS4 came out, I remember that there was barely a trickle of information about the console, and then all of a sudden they're like, oh yeah, here you go, we have a new console.
So with the PS4, they actually unveiled the console in February of the launch year, because what happens is, like, they invite all the retailers like Walmart, GameStop, Amazon, etc., and they showcase the console and let them know the price privately so that they can place orders for it to go on sale during the launch period in the holiday season. This time, I'm not sure if that has happened yet. Maybe it's happened behind closed doors. But by February, Sony launches or shows off the console in some way or the other. It may not show you the console, how it looked like, but they show you how games run on it and everything else that you need to know about a console. And this time, they haven't done it.
Yeah, okay. Let's see. I think we've covered the consoles in detail now, so we'll probably come back to this topic in a few weeks once we know more about either console for that matter. And now let's move on to a different area. Let's get back to phones, because there's one phone in particular I was really interested in looking at, and it looks like that's finally coming to India. The Galaxy Z Flip. Now, Akshay, I know you've used the phone. What do you make of it?
Don't you say the flex thing again.
No, man, that is already implied at this point.
Yeah.
So what's your thoughts on the phone?
So I did my first impressions. I mean, I got to use it for an hour, maybe tops an hour. And in that hour, I could just feel that it was the sexiest phone I've seen in the past 5-6 years. It felt like a proper phone. It didn't feel like a concept phone. It didn't feel like something that might break in my hand by mistake. Or, I mean, I use the Razer as well, and the differences are, there's massive differences between the two. The experience is on another level on the Z Flip, whereas the Razer felt more like a something that is still in the works. And the body of the phone felt great. The screen feels great, even though there are reports that it's plastic. Trust me, it feels like a glass screen, the way any normal smartphone feels like. That's what the Z Flip feels like. And the software has been fine-tuned for that foldable experience as well. Like, you can manage multiple apps. I mean, they have to be compatible, but you can manage compatible apps into different screens when you are in the flex mode, or even when it's completely unfolded. And even like when you're using the camera, you can use it like how women use their makeup boxes to do makeup. Instead of the glass on that side of the screen, there's the viewfinder of the camera. Right. So, I mean, it's a very well thought out phone in both hardware and software. That's what I felt.
Yeah. Dhruv, did you get a chance to look at the phone or coverage of it? And what do you think? What do you think of what Samsung is doing here?
You know, my colleague David Emel just put out his review yesterday, and quoting him, after a really long time, we're coming across a phone which is basically a gadget. And that's what I love about this phone. It's not yet another slab of glass. It's not yet another device that is just supposed to, you know, serve a purpose. It's a gadget. It's fun. It's a different form factor. There is something tangible and, you know, interesting about it. And that's what really catches my eye. We haven't seen that in a really long time. And I really yearn for the days when there were multiple form factors to choose from, be it sliders, be it clamshells, side sliders with hardware keyboards. I know there's not a place for all of those, but I like the fact that foldable displays bringing back some of these form factors.
Yeah, I particularly agree with you there. I think one of my favorite devices last year was the Xiaomi Mi Mix 3. And that was just because that whole screen slid down on these magnetic rails to reveal the front camera. And I just thought that was incredibly cool. I mean, that's like a cool way to show it off, right? So I was in the US at the time with my colleagues and I basically showed it off to them and they were all visibly blown away. And that's what was missing from the industry for the longest time, because in the last 4 or 5 years, it has just been iterating on these metal and glass designs and we haven't really seen anything that stood out. Sure, screens are bezel-less and there's more exotic materials and gradients and whatnot, but the Z Flip is a paradigm shift in how we view phones, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, the phone is sold out in India as well. That's a big deal. It's not a cheap phone. It's 1,10,000 bucks for a phone that you don't even know is going to carry on a legacy or not. But it is sold out here.
That's insane. I'm worried about a few things. I was looking at the teardown on iFixit and they noted that hinge that's designed to catch dust doesn't really work. I'm particularly worried about that in India because we have a lot of dust here. So what if that gets into the hinge and makes its way underneath that screen and it leads to creaks and noises and whatnot. But other than that, yeah, this looks like a foldable phone I'm finally interested in using day to day.
Yeah, and I'm okay with the fact that it doesn't have absolutely cutting edge specs or whatever. Like an 855 plus is good enough. I'm sure somebody's going to raise issues with that. Oh, hey, it's a 1 lakh rupee phone which doesn't have the latest processor. It's fast enough. Battery life so far, going by the results, seems to be okay. It's not terrible. It's not amazing. 3300 mAh is what you'd get on a Pixel. So take it as you will.
The interesting thing is that they're using two batteries on both sides of the phone. That I really like that. It is kind of obvious that they would implement that, but I did not see it happening that easily.
Yeah. And I like the design. I really like that. I like that it folds down and it's really compact. And I'm not fully sold on the glass. I need to use it because of that ultra-thin glass layer that seems really easy to scratch. But yeah, sounds like a really interesting device.
I mean the phone is going to be folded most of the times, right?
Yeah.
You're not going to be running through, you won't scratch it with your fingernail. Whoever is saying that, I really want to meet that person and see his nails. What are they made of? Because it's not that easy to get it. Just get a screen scratched up from fingernails.
Also, you know what? Over the last few quarters, speaking like an analyst, I've kind of realized that I'm no longer spending my entire day on my phone. I would actually prefer if I didn't. And maybe this is like a hugely, it's just an odd point to make, but the foldable phone enables that to a certain degree. It reduces a phone to its function. And it's not something, hey, I'm sitting somewhere, I'm just like flicking on the power button and just checking or mindlessly browsing Reddit. It requires a certain action that you open up the phone and then you peruse whatever you want to say. And it brings us back to that early, late 1990s or early 2000s era where a phone had a function. It was a gadget to do a certain task, not something that is essentially
your life.
Taken hold of your life.
Yeah.
That's actually a great point with the physical action. And yeah, I didn't even think of that.
I would call it physical well-being.
Yeah. If Samsung doesn't advertise it, they're missing out. Physical well-being.
Yeah, man.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. But even then, let's say you want to know what's happening on your phone. That phone has a 1.1-inch OLED display, which only shows the icons of your notifications, not the actual notification or the contents of the notification, which also is good enough to see, is it worth it to open the phone or
exactly,
not?
Exactly, right now, a lot of our phones have always on displays. So when a notification comes up or it's always there, there's this need to check, if it might be something important. But hey, you see that there's an icon. If it's not say, suppose, a Slack message, which means it might be from work, you can ignore it and, you know, get back to it whenever you want. Yes. And it just reduces your personal dependence on your phone and your digital connectedness, if that's a word.
Yeah, and I like how you just were like a major baller and said, yeah, I just ignore work messages, no big deal.
We're getting old.
Yeah, that's true, man. Getting old sucks. Okay, now I'm really sold on the Galaxy Z Flip. Samsung India, send me one.
I thought it was many last week. Now it's one.
Yeah, one is enough. Let's start with one and see.
Yeah.
My wife's almost convinced herself, that I need to buy her one.
So. You know what my wife said? It's the first generation of this foldable screen. Yeah. Let's wait a bit and get the one that actually works.
Wow.
Yeah. Like that. No, my wife is pretty convinced.
Nice. Yeah.
And I'm almost considering deferring a personal purchase to get her that phone. So, I don't know. Phone seems to be doing its job.
Yeah, that's great marketing. Even for a first generation product to have that kind of mainstream appeal.
That's the thing, though. I think they really
nailed the design.
Touched a point there where, you know, people are... I mean, I personally would probably buy a foldable, which has a fold-out big screen, like the first generation Fold.
Mm-hmm.
But that's me. But for the mass audience, I think they would actually prefer something which folds down to a much more comfortable and smaller size. Because let's all admit it, the phones are getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and they just don't fit in skinny jeans anymore.
I wouldn't know because I don't wear skinny jeans, but sure, I'll take your word for it, man.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew. I was waiting for it.
Yeah.
All right. I think we should move on to our next topic.
Yeah.
Now.
And from a good phone to a bad one, let's talk about the Pixel 4 series.
What an introduction.
We'll just leave all of this to you, Harish. You spent the maximum amount of time with it.
I don't understand, because when I got the Pixel 4, I've used it for close to, I don't know, 2.5 months, and I like the phone. I like the fact that it has a 90Hz display that makes a whole load of difference. I love the camera. The second camera is okay. The telephoto is fine. I hate the fact that there's no wide angle, but we'll get to that later. But I just don't understand what Google was trying to achieve. It seems year after year, they're still iterating on something, but they're never quite finished. This is the fourth generation. This is the fourth year of a Pixel phone. And it still isn't on par with what Samsung, Huawei, and even OnePlus make, right? At least on the hardware front. There are always issues with the Pixel. My unit, the oleophobic coating came off in 2 weeks, and I didn't even do anything with it. And it's those minor issues over and over again on the software front. The face unlock was a shambles when it came out, right? They couldn't figure out that you needed the eyes to be open for it to work, and then that came out in an update that was delivered 3 weeks later. So yeah, Google, I don't know, doesn't have a coherent strategy, because every single generation, there are these features that bring down the phone ultimately. And with this one, it's the fact that there's no original quality uploads anymore. That for me made it like a less of a recommendation, because for the last 3 years, at least, sure, there were problems with Pixels, but you at least had these standout features that made it fun to use the phone. You had all those Google software editions that were really quite nice, because I use Now Playing a lot when I'm outside, and things like At a Glance. These are mindful additions that go a long way, and they were still not good value, but at least things like original quality uploads meant that, okay, you're getting some value for the product. But with the Pixel 4, you don't get any of that. For like a $900 phone, you're absolutely not getting anything that justifies the cost.
Yeah, that's exactly, you know, I mean, what really struck out to me, I am okay with not so great battery life. I could live with the lack of an ultra-wide camera, but come on, like, one of your biggest selling points was imaging and full quality uploads, and you're going to kill that as well. I don't know. That really just took away from, hey, I'll still get the Pixel 4 imported from somewhere, or just, you know, figure out a way to get hold of the phone from, like, I don't think I really want this phone anymore.
Yeah.
You're compromising so much for the Google experience, and the competition is almost as good. Like, you're not really particularly missing out, especially if you're on a OnePlus phone. Again, OnePlus.
Oh my God.
But that's the thing. How much do you have to give up to buy into a Google phone? I'm not really sure if it's worth it anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. Akshay, were you able to use one of these and try it out and see what the deal was?
I mean, I saw it for like 5 minutes at an airport, and I couldn't really draw conclusions how the phone was. But, I mean, I knew that I won't get one when I saw one of your own stories when you said that if this is the battery that's on the Pixel 4, it's going to be dead on arrival, basically. Remember, Harish, you did that based on a leak story, and you said this battery size is not good enough for it to last even a day. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
And I think that was the biggest turnoff for me. I mean, yes, I do care about the original quality pictures and everything, but not as much as that battery life. If your phone does not have juice in it, what's the point of having all those features? It's not, if it doesn't last more than 4 to 5 hours a day, it's not a phone to me. It's worse than my DSLR.
Yeah, that's an interesting anecdote, actually, about my Pixel 4 usage. I got such bad battery life that I physically forced myself to use my phone less, because I knew that if I was outside and using my phone, it would run out before I got home. So
digital being taken to a next level.
We kill your phone, literally.
Yeah, this is more like paying a lot of money for a phone that you physically cannot use. But that is what I'm trying to say here with Google. I mean, they would have had to test this, right? Google usually test these devices internally for several months before they roll it out. So at some point, somebody would have realized that this does not give good battery life. And I got the XL variant. The regular Pixel 4 is horrible. I mean, it doesn't even last till evening. At least with the Pixel 4 XL, there are scenarios where even with average use, you can get it to last till the end of the day. But somebody should have flagged that and said, okay, this is something that's not tenable and we need to fix it. I just don't see that mentality from Google on a hardware side, because for the longest time, they've always been like, oh, we'll fix everything on the software front. If it's an issue, no worries, we'll fix it on the software. We'll issue updates. But battery life is one of those things that cannot be fixed with a software update, right?
But that's the thing, like, I just don't get it. It's not easy to make a phone, but these are basic issues where Google is stumbling on. Heck, even Micro Max did not have these stupid issues. You put a slightly bigger battery, you solve the battery issue. Like, it is not that hard.
I think the one thing that I concluded was that the hardware division is absolutely not talking to the software division, and the software division is not talking to hardware. It's both ways. And if you don't talk to each other, this is what happens. The Pixel 4 happens.
That's absolutely true. I don't know why it's so hard to make a phone. I mean, Google acquired all those HTC engineers, so they have the talent. I mean, they have veterans in... the team that Google has is full of veterans that have been making phones for like 2 decades or more, right? So these are basic issues that shouldn't be there on a phone that's in its fourth generation.
They have the HTC guys as well, right?
They do.
What are they doing?
I have no idea. I think they're all playing games on the Vive.
I think a budget Android phone. Okay. Sorry, I think a budget that. Android, any budget Android phone knows what it's doing and what its purpose is better than what the Pixel 4.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, the Pixel 3a, in terms of value, is a much better product than the Pixel 4. Like, Google is basically shooting itself in the foot with the mid-range series, and I think it'll do that this year also with the 4a. Whenever that thing comes out, it will obviously be better than the 4XL, because it won't have that 90 hertz display, so it won't suck the battery. And yeah, and overall, the Pixel mid-range series has been as good as the high-end series has been bad.
Hey, what if Google just stuck itself to being a mid-range phone manufacturer with a killer camera?
I have no problems with that. I would actually buy that every year.
I think that's basically Google's business strategy now. I mean, I don't think, aside from bloggers and a few folks that really want that Google camera on a high-end device, nobody's buying the Pixel 4 series. I mean, why would they when the Galaxy S10 and Note 10 and now the S20 is available?
Yeah, that's true. It's just a boring phone, and they really messed up big time.
Yeah. It's a shame too, right? Because whatever they do on the software front is still really cool, and it brings meaningful additions. But for whatever reason, they just haven't been able to nail the hardware. And it's not just phones. Even if you look at their tablets and everything else they launched, it just seems like they're not able to figure out how to design physical products.
I have a question though, Harish. What about when it actually works? When it does, whatever time, whatever period it works for? How is the phone when it actually works?
Oh, when it works, it's fantastic. I love it. It's just when the screen is actually usable and when the battery life is still there, it's a fantastic phone. Everything comes together really well. There's no issues with usability as such. It's just how long you can actually use the phone for before it dies. That's the main problem.
So you're saying if this thing had a bigger battery, it would have been perfect? Or not perfect, but...
Well, bigger battery, wide-angle camera, because this is the only phone that doesn't have one. And a slightly better screen with a coating that doesn't come off. If it had all those things and maybe cost less, this would have been the ideal phone.
That's a lot of things that you want.
So what I'm basically saying is I want a Pixel 4a.
Yeah, that's what you're saying. And we'll know soon enough whether that's coming or not.
Well, it should be.
Or you want a OnePlus with a Google Pixel camera.
Yeah, basically.
Isn't that the dream?
They should just license out their camera technology to companies now.
And we'll change the name of the podcast now. This is the Untitled Gadget Podcast OnePlus Edition.
Yeah, we kind of like that brand a bit too much.
We should hit them up and tell them to, you know, sponsor us or something.
Yeah, maybe when the OnePlus 8 comes around.
Well, monetization, all those dollars.
Yeah, that's one thing the three of us are good at, right? Yay, we are very business savvy.
And wanting dollars or making dollars?
So I have a kind of a mini game for you guys. Right now we know the X50 and the IQ3. Whatever the fuck is launching next week, right? And let's just try to predict the prices of the two phones. And whoever is closest to the prices will get 10 points and so on and so forth. Yeah?
What are those points worth, man?
We'll see by the end of, let's say, the year who wins the contest. And
end of the year?
Oh. Yeah, man. That's we'll keep doing this every week. And whoever wins, the three of us will gift them something.
So just for all of you guys, this is a surprise for us. Like,
I just threw it down.
Surprised us with a quiz.
Yeah, whoever wins gets to hang out with Akshay at his house for a day and play all those sexy games that he has and just chill with him, drink some good booze.
Akshay's got all of them sexy games. Yeah. If you know what I mean.
Yeah, that's not happening at home, but yeah. I mean, everything else.
Yeah. Cool.
Okay, so what do you think the Realme 5G X55, that's what it's called? How much do you think that's going to cost?
I think that'll be $48,999.
What about you?
$45,999.
Okay, I'll go with... Okay, 47,999. Cool. So whoever's closest, we'll see, we'll get the points. And what about the IQ3? IQ3.
45.
I'll go 43.
Ambitious 43.
For the base variant.
Nice.
For the base variant.
What's the base variant? Oh, the 4G one. Wait,
yeah.
4G one will be...
Okay, no, wait. Let me talk about the 5G one. I'll go 49. Okay, so we all of us will keep note of this, and when the prices are revealed, let's see who's the winner next week. Ooh, yeah,
I'm excited now.
All of them sexy games.
Yeah.
With
But wait, it'll be us winning, right? One of us will win.
Yeah, I mean, by the end of the year, if this podcast lasts till the end of the year, and we'll tally all the points from every week, and we'll all pull in and give that person
something. We should throw it out to the audience once we become famous and shit.
Yeah, podcast guruji, hai?
Chaliye, podcast karte hai.
Thank you. All right. Let's see how we're doing on time. Okay, we have 5 minutes. Wow, that's the ideal amount of time because you know what takes 5 minutes? Android 11. Well, it takes more than 5 minutes, but that's what we have. So that's what I'll talk about. So the first preview of Android 11 is out. And this is the first developer preview. So you should not install it even if you have an eligible Pixel because it will absolutely break things on your phone. But there are a lot of interesting things to see. And we get a first look at what Google is thinking about in terms of software changes. So let's dive in. I'll quickly run down the features and we can talk about that. So first is the fact that it'll have better support for pinhole and waterfall screens. We are starting to see manufacturers like Vivo and Oppo come up with these waterfall screens on their phones, and Android 11 will have better functionality for those. And one more interesting feature is that messaging services, any messaging app will now be able to use chat bubbles like Facebook Messenger has been doing for so long. I particularly am not a fan of that, but clearly there's a market for it.
I hate those bubbles.
Yeah, they're very intrusive and it's annoying, but hey, now you can see those from literally every single messaging app. So yay, Google.
It makes me throw my phone.
Same. And one more thing on the notification front is because, well, Google somehow needs to find a way to fuck with notifications with every release. This time it's trying to do ongoing conversations in the notification shade directly. This is also one of those things that I probably will not end up liking because I want that notification shade free of any clutter or any notifications. So if there's like an ongoing thread there, persistent notification style, that will be really annoying really fast. So let's see how it manages to work with that. Finally, about the notifications, now there's an option to insert images directly from the notification shade. So let's also see how that works. Let's look at some more features. The one that I am actually interested in the most is one-time permissions. iOS has been doing this right for 1 year now. So say you're using something like Swiggy or Zomato and they need to get your location. Now, previously, the only way to do that was either allow these apps access to your location all the time or allow them while you're in that app. Now you can just set that permission to be accessed one time. And that is a big deal in how Android works. So that's like a quick look. So let's start with talking about permissions, guys. What do you think of this one-time permission deal?
Yeah, it's great to have. And I mean, with every single app trying to tap into all the permission options available, it's definitely a nice... I would forget about nice. It's more like a necessity at this point. And I'm glad that Google is finally catching up with Apple on that front.
I particularly like this because Indian apps, I don't know why, are thirsty when it comes to permissions. They seem to want everything that I've ever done in my life just so that I can order food. So I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, I mean, I've been using the iPhone for many years. And the past year with iOS 13, they've brought this feature over. And I mean, I really like it that they give you the control of your privacy. And the fact that Android is bringing it over as well is something that everyone will appreciate. Because, you know, why do you want to send your location information all the time?
Yeah, I don't like sending my location information at all. Okay, so what do you think about the notification changes then? Are you a fan of ongoing notification conversations in that notification shade?
Yeah, I don't know about that, but the one change that I do like is that they allow the music player widget to scooch in right at the top, even when there's like a whole bunch of other things going on, and you can just pull up do a half draw for the notification shade, and your music player widget will still be there, since that's something that I actually do use a lot. I'm certainly happy about that. Conflicted about the others, not entirely sure. I'll just have to see how it plays out.
Cool.
I'm actually confused what I want. I mean, I love to ignore notifications a lot, and especially if it's from WhatsApp. But then again, if you're a power user and you don't want to open the app and then the chat to, let's say, attach a picture or whatever every single time, it may save you a lot of time, but I have to see how it uses your battery, because if it's power extensive, then I will probably not use that feature at all.
Yeah, let's see how Google does it. So like the last two release cycles, we'll get 6 beta builds of Android 11 and the final stable will go live sometime in October, because that's usually the time frame Google decides for these things. So that's what we have right now in terms of Android 11. There are some more features that I didn't get into, but we should have a lot more to talk about probably with the next beta, when we actually see a few user interface changes, because that's when...
Actually, like before we move on, I think I want to bring up the point of scoped storage and what you guys think about it. What this will basically mean is that your apps are restricted to very specific folders on storage. And even if you use a file manager, you can't essentially access the entire storage area. And it fundamentally changes how you deal with storage on Android. And it's been one of the biggest plus points for me to stick to Android over iOS, that I can essentially manage my own, my entire file system. And I'm the kind of guy who will use FTP using my phone, who will run a file server on my phone. So this is something that particularly affects me. What do you guys think?
It doesn't affect me as much, but I'm still not too sure about whether this was the smart decision. I mean, this was the right move. I understand why Google went this route, considering privacy and it wants to lock down the file system. But I don't know. I agree with you in that one of the main reasons we use Android is because it's so open and flexible and you can do all these things, right? So still not too sure, but we'll have to see how it works, how limited the access will be. But right now, I'm not a fan. But then again, none of us use our phones like how you do, Dhruv. So,
I mean, I do use a File Explorer app every other day, but yeah, I'm not sure. I need to see how Google implements it before I can even have an opinion on this.
Let's see. Well, we still have so many beta builds to go, so there's a lot of time for Google to tweak and make changes. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey. I think we've met our time limit now.
Yes, we have. All right. That was a fun chat.
Hashtag awkward Google silence.
I think that's literally the hashtag for their entire hardware business. Okay. That was fun. Thanks for listening, you guys. And thanks, Dhruv and Akshay. Let's do this next week.